It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It is a little bit more complicated getting things to air from somewhere away from the magnificent Kincaid Mansion and the fabulous Horn Studios therein. But, I think we're live. By Jove, I hope. And all it took was a couple of hours on tech support with Verizon to sort out their wireless internet, and golly Moses, here we are. And I'm showing good streaming across both streams. Of course, one never really knows about whether the White Rose stream is doing what it's supposed to do, but you know, we'll roll the dice and take our chances. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is the 18th day of June 2019. This program is live at 6:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time from somewhere in the far reaches of the trackless reaches of suburban Washington, D.C. We'll be here for a couple of more days. We'll finish up our work on Thursday, and then hopefully I'm up and out early on Friday and home in plenty of time to have Friday on the front porch. As is always the case, this program begins with thanks. Thanks to our subscribers who take care of about a quarter of the funding each and every month. So in this case, thanks go out for this 18th day of the month to Charlene and to Stephen and to Grace. Thank you, all three of you, for being subscribers and helping to keep independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting on the air. Ralphs asks in the chat room, which, by the way, you're welcome to join in. We have a great time there. Just go over to headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself a screen name and a password, and by Jove, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Ralphs and Squeaky, and more to wander in later, I hope. And, of course, moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, is choosing not to fold space today and sitting in the air-conditioned comfort of the villa in Northern California. Ah, thanks, Sparky. White Rose is good, he says. So everything's working, and what a little miracle that is. But Ralphs asked, do you have your yuzu sauce in D.C.? I brought a bottle with me. You never know when you're going to need it. I've gotten to where I just travel with it. I remember when Hillary Clinton was given so much grief as being inauthentic for daring to suggest that she carried hot sauce with her wherever she went, but she'd only been doing it since like the 70s, and everything, I guess, was fair game. No, it wasn't. It was just, well, but we get the idea. Anyway, it is Trumptanic Tuesday. The fundraising goal is at $860. Yeah, I know. it's scary. It's at $860, and there are $360 remaining in the Have a Week on Me challenge, courtesy of a generous offer from an anonymous member of our community. So that's where all of that stands. So, you know, if we can knock out some of it, that'd be awesome. And somehow or another, if by some miracle or another we've knocked it all out by Friday, well, we'll have fundraising free radio during the entire last week of June. And I'm having a hard time coming to terms with the fact that it's the last week of June. Or that is coming up. 2 days from now will be West Virginia Day. We celebrate that on the 20th day of June every year, going back to this to West Virginia becoming a state on June the 20th, 1863. Lots of history behind that, but there will be a certain satisfying irony in the fact that I will be spending West Virginia Day in the nation's capital, and I'll be trying, as we have been trying for lo these many years, to make West Virginia a better and more livable place for the people who call it home. Now, I don't know what you're doing right now, but I'm nice and dry here inside the hotel in the vast and trackless reaches of suburban D.C., but, well, apparently they're not real happy down in Orlando right now. I don't know who scheduled Julius Caesar's campaign kickoff for Florida in June. You know, hurricane season's underway. They're not having a hurricane in Orlando or anything, but it is pouring down the rain, and there's a message on an electronic signboard that I saw a few minutes ago telling the maggots, assuming that, you know, they can read, and the ones who can't, maybe they'll just communicate with each other by a series of clicks and grunts and screeches and the occasional flinging of poo to seek shelter. But the maggots aren't seeking shelter because there's no shelter for them to seek, because they're waiting to see their god emperor. They're waiting for the two-hour hate to come later this evening. Don't worry, I don't think we'll be taking any of that audio. Why bother? It's rather disgusting, really. But we've got a lot to go into this evening, and if along the way we were somehow miraculously able to knock out some of that $860, that would be fan-freaking-tastic. Thank you. Scott in San Diego says that both White Rose and HeadOn.live sound great. I had a message from Les, I believe it was, a moment ago, telling me that things are sounding good on TuneIn via the truck speaker. Thank you, Les. Thank you very much. And so that gives us an idea that maybe, just maybe, we might have a fighting chance of getting a show in this evening. 2 hours or 3 hours, however, however much I can manage. Thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport for getting us started. We're down to 810. Thank you, Jack. That's huge. That is tremendous, and hopefully Jack will have a little bit of company to help take things down even further. Thank you, Jack, very, very much indeed. It is deeply appreciated. Where to begin? I mean, you know, Trumptanic Tuesday is a cataloging, not really a celebration, but at least a cataloging of the very worst of what passes for right-wing intellect in this country. And so let's start with some genuine right-wing, white-wing intellect, shall we? Apparently, every Tuesday, Chinless Mitch McConnell the not particularly good at being an American Republican Senate Majority Leader who takes filthy, filthy money to try to prop up his reelection chances through his wife's skeevy manipulation of what, the Department of Transportation? Yeah, she was Department of Labor under Dim Leader Bush, but she's right. Yeah. Well, on Tuesdays, Chinless Mitch likes to have himself a press conference. Yes, he does. And today was no different. And a question came up, and it has to do with the... Steve in New York wants to know, are we live? We are. That's not a dumb question at all. This program is live for the 18th of June, 2019. But back to Chinless Mitch, the not very good at being an American Senate Majority Leader. In the recent past, there has been conversation over on the Democratic side of the aisle among the presidential candidates in relation to the idea of reparations related to our vicious past involvement with chattel slavery in this country. Among others, Senator Kamala Harris and Senator Bernie Sanders and former House member Beto O'Rourke all have noted that they would sign a bill, if Congress sent it to them, to form a study commission relative to the idea of reparations. And also, Senator Cory Booker has actually introduced legislation to study reparations. This moved Chinless Mitch McConnell to speech. Oh. How about that? I walked in a few minutes ago and it was sunshiny outside, and now it's absolutely pouring the rain. There went my trip to the pool after the program. But Chinless Mitch wanted everyone to know that in addition to the fact that he doesn't want to fully restore the Voting Rights Act and he has no interest in the ethics legislation known as H.R. 1, which is languishing on his desk. Well, Chinless Mitch wants everybody to know, and remember, this is an exhibition of titanic right-wing intellect. Chinless Mitch he wanted to telegraph a signal out to all the good God-fearing white people out there, and said, "I don't think reparations for something that happened 150 years ago, for whom none of us currently living are responsible, is a good idea. You know, we've tried to deal with our original sin of slavery by fighting a civil war, by passing landmark civil rights legislation." Now, that would include the Voting Rights Act that he has no interest in restoring. And then, I forgot the hockey puck warning, didn't I? Hockey puck warning. Get it. Get the duct tape. Because after noting that we had a civil war, that we tried to deal with our original sin of slavery by fighting a civil war. Let's start with that phrase. No, that wasn't dealing with it. That was having to fight a war because half of the country at the time refused to even consider the idea that people with dark skin tones were fully human. It wasn't trying to deal with it by fighting a civil war. It's not like the Union marched down and started freeing slaves. That little dust-up that cost the lives of, 300,000 or more American citizens and 300,000 or more traitors. That got started when the traitors started lobbing shells from an artillery battery in Charleston, South Carolina, at a federal fort that was put in place to defend Charleston Harbor, Fort Sumter. So it wasn't trying to deal with it. Nobody lined up, we can't sort out that whole slavery thing, so we might as well fight a civil war over it. Jesus Christ, Addison. And then there's the landmark civil rights legislation that he doesn't think is necessary anymore. What's that, Steve, in New York? Let's not forget we were fighting a war of treason. Precisely. Yes, absolutely. So we've got that. But here's the hockey puck part. We've tried to deal with our original sin of slavery by fighting a civil war, by passing landmark civil rights legislation, period. We elected an African-American president. No, really. The racist, bigoted, disgusting, un-American, Russian money-taking, via the National Ruble Association, Senate Majority Leader says that we don't need reparations because Obama. And, I'm a little put off by that "we" he threw around there, as in, we elected an African-American president. No, we didn't, Mitch, because you didn't vote for him. You did everything in your power to keep him from being president, and once he was president, Chinless Mitch, you did everything in your power to keep him from being presidential, to keep legislation from being. In fact, you said as much. You said that as long as there was breath in your body, none of that one's legislative goals were going to be accomplished by the Republican Senate. When you took over the Senate back in, January 2011? And we have suffered under your lash ever since, Addison. I know. Ron and Raleigh reminds me. Remember, Bob, it's not about hate. It's about heritage. States' rights, not slavery, y'all. Okay. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. We'll work on that in short order. It's not about heritage. Hate, it's about heritage, sure. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that heritage includes statements like slavery is not only acceptable, it is a positive thing. Who was that? John C. Calhoun, I believe, who said that. But anyway, after citing we don't need no reparations because Obama, Chinless Mitch, having already crammed one of his feet into his mouth, began to dazzle those assembled by showing them that in fact he could get the other foot in there with it, and followed up by saying, "I think we're always a work in progress in this country, but no one currently alive was responsible for slavery, and I don't think we should be trying to figure out how to compensate for it. Now, I don't think reparations are a good idea." I wonder if that applies, for instance, to the descendants of people murdered at places like Dachau and Bergen-Belsen and Auschwitz, and the European firms that profited by slave labor during the Second World War. Anybody? But now let's understand that Addison is a lawyer, and Addison understands the legal concepts involved here. And once again, I'll simply note that no one has ever been compensated for the labor that was stolen from millions of people who were constitutionally deemed to be three-fifths American or three-fifths of a human being. But they were ripped off. They were stolen from. And there are, there are legal, mostly boilerplate phrases out there that you'll see in contract language, deed language, trust language. For instance, to themselves, their heirs, and assigns forever. Claims can be assignable. Now, I realize there are statutes of limitations involved, but those are for individual claims in tort. This would be some sort of something of a hybrid process. And arguably the discovery rule, which is also a legal concept, might come into play, because no one's ever actually discovered. That says that the statute of limitations, you get a couple of years after you discover you've been the victim of a wrong. And we have yet to discover to this day exactly how much monetary value, as expressed in present-day dollars, was stolen by white plantation owners and slave owners all over the South. I mean, maybe there's been some work done on it, but I'm not aware of it. But no, he had to say that because he had to make clear to the Republican maggot base that he too can be every bit as much of a racist and a bigot as Donald Trump is, because he needs that Trump energy in Kentucky in 2020, because the fact of the matter is, Addison, Chinless Mitch McConnell is the single least popular senator in the entire United States of America, and has an approval rating in his own state among his own constituents of somewhere in the pitiable level of around 20%. So to the extent that Kentucky, the Commonwealth of Kentucky, needs or will stay Trumpy in 2020, it's not entirely guaranteed, you know. I saw polling data earlier today that showed that Nitwit Nero is actually underwater to several Democratic presidential hopefuls in, wait for it, Texas. John Bridevo is having an effect down there. John and his blue dot family may turn that whole state blue. May stop being a dot and start being a C. But Kentucky is still fairly Trumpy, and when you get 20% approval rating, you're going to need some sort of coattails to ride on, because otherwise you might just turn out to be an ex-senator. And that can happen kind of quickie-like. So I just thought that was a nice starting place for the evening. Because tomorrow, you see, in a subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee, they're actually going to have a hearing on reparations. And it could be a pretty big deal. Might want to put that on your radar for tomorrow. He doesn't like anything that smacks of an expansion of freedom democracy. Chinless Mitch recently absolutely decried, excoriated some discussions going on in the House of Representatives, in which folks are talking about statehood for the District of Columbia. And, you know, Chinless Mitch knows what that would mean. Last week, talking to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and the legion of white people who watch that, he said, well, they plan to make the District of Columbia a state. That'd give them two new Democratic senators. Puerto Rico a state. That'd give them two more new Democratic senators. This is full-bore socialism on the march in the House. Wow. Why didn't he just say they'd probably send brown people to the Senate and we just can't have that? But of course, there's an element of truth in it. Nobody knows Republicans quite like people who live in the District of Columbia. They've seen the pillage and the plunder. They know how thoroughly they are despised by the Republicans. So it would take a lot of skullduggery to put two senators, or even one Republican senator, from D.C. or Puerto Rico in the Senate. I mean, it would be a hot mess. But, again, this is dog whistling. This is telling the faithful that you're going to maintain the right wing's racist barricades. Okay. Ron in Raleigh says, let me get this straight. They can still be erecting Confederate monuments as late as 2015, but you can't even discuss reparations? Son of a bitch! I know. But hey, what do you want, Ron? They're taking St. Jefferson Davis's name off of US-1 right here in old Virginia. The horror. The horror. So, yeah. Steve in New York says, of course, this all illustrates that there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. Not a dime's worth of difference, as George Wallace used to say. And there are still people repeating that mantra to this day, left and right. Thank you to Frank. Frank just took us down to 785, and so that means we've reduced the Have a Week on Me challenge to what? Uh, $285. $285. So we're making progress. Thank you, Frank, very kindly. As Scott in San Diego noted, Mitch McConnell, unliked and unlovely. Both feet are in his mouth. His head is up his ass. His turtle-like face is chinless, strangely smooth, stretched out, and glazed. He couldn't be more rearranged if he'd used a malfunctioning transporter to get beamed somewhere. And God knows we wish he would. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But there were a number of things that I sort of had in mind for this evening. I noticed a piece of language that came from out the word processor, if not the pen, of noted beer aficionado and Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. He recently joined a right-wing majority in a case called Manhattan Community Access Corp. versus Halleck. Some of the stuff that shows up at the Supreme Court, it can appear to be rather, well, dry. In this case, it was a First Amendment question. And what it centered on was whether a community access TV station, which was, well, you know what public access TV is. They wanted to know, the question put forward was whether or not that public access TV channel was what the law deems a state actor. If it was a state actor, it would be bound by the First Amendment. Remember, private entities are not touched by the First Amendment. So, you know, every time some right-wing asshat hollers that word that has all the same letters as ginger but isn't ginger and gets fired and all the little maggots start hopping up and down and flinging poo and screaming, First Amendment, First Amendment, First Amendment, they are, of course, idiots. Because private entities are not touched by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. The First Amendment prevents government from suppressing free speech, okay? So that was the question. Was Manhattan Community Access Corp. a state actor for purposes of the First Amendment? Well, Ann's boy Neil and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Brett Kavanaugh, who loves beer, and of course John Roberts, old Balls and Strikes John Roberts, they all came to the predictable right-wing Republican conclusion that no, Manhattan Community Access Corp. was not a state actor and therefore had no relationship to the First Amendment. The other four justices were in complete disagreement. The other four justices were probably right. But in the course of reading the opinion, a legal scholar by the name of Michael Dorff over at Cornell University, he's got a blog, it's called Dorff on Law. He noticed a little piece of right-wing language that sort of leapt off the page at him. And by way of introduction or expansion on this topic, we should probably note that, of course, there has been a long fascination, a long dalliance, a long love affair between the white wing and things like the very badly written science fiction works of Ayn Rand. You know, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged and all that crappy pulp. If you remember back a few years in time, before he became Speaker of the House, when he was still being considered as a, well, he was a policy wonk. He was a Republican policy guy. I'm talking about Eddie Munster, the former Speaker of the House. The granny starver from Wisconsin, Ryan. His big policy ideas were, we need to get rid of Medicare, we need to get rid of Medicaid, we need to get rid of Social Security, and anything else that benefits anyone except, him, Paul Ryan. Well, back when he was a congressman, before he became a muckety-muck, when his interns would show up for the summer to work in his office, he would assign them to read. Now, these are young, impressionable minds, which is why they were subjected to it. He would assign them to read Atlas Shrugged, which, by the way, has some pretty weird, kinky passages to it. Just saying. But he would have them read it because he deemed it to be some sort of profound and life-changing philosophical and economic treatise about freedom. And so in this this opinion, as written by Brat Kavanaugh, there appears, and Michael Dorff found it over at Dorff on Law, the following language. It is sometimes said that the bigger the government, the smaller the individual. That's a pretty loose interpretation of the word sometimes. It is sometimes said that the bigger the government, the smaller the individual. That doesn't even make any sense. That's just goddamn word salad. Consistent with the text of the Constitution, the state action doctrine enforces a critical boundary between the government and the individual, and thereby protects a robust sphere of individual liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Expanding the state action doctrine beyond its traditional boundaries would expand governmental control while restricting individual liberty and private enterprise. I don't have any reverb here, otherwise we'd use reverb on private enterprise because it's sacred. We decline to do so in this case. So it's that line. It is sometimes said that the bigger the government, the smaller the individual. Nobody sometimes says that. Over at his blog post, Professor Dorff said, I never heard anyone say this, and the opinion provides no citation, so I Googled it. I mean, because there are things that are sometimes said. It is sometimes said that early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Ben Franklin said that. It is sometimes said that 67 years ago, our forefathers had... Abraham Lincoln said that, and people still quote it from once in a while. Yeah. Have you ever heard? Because I hadn't. Michael Dorff hadn't. It is sometimes said that the bigger the government, the smaller the individual. It may not sound like much, but when I see the phrase big government, I immediately flash to the oft-repeated bullshit mantra of the right wing as coined by Grover Norquist, who once said, "I want government so small I can drown it in the bathtub." And every time I think of Grover Norquist saying that, I think of the terrifying, horrifying, shocking images of bodies floating in the toxic stew that was the aftermath of Katrina, where in fact small government was not drowned in a bathtub, but a lot of American citizens were drowned in brackish filth because of the Republican yearning for that small government. Well, lo and behold, Michael Dorff went digging around. He Googled that phrase, and up popped the Atlas Society on Twitter. And they're an Ayn Randian outfit, or account, or whatever. According to what he was able to dig up, Michael Dorff pointed out, it appears to be an aphorism coined by a libertarian talk show host named Dennis Prager, who originally referred to citizen rather than individual. Various libertarian candidates for office have used the phrase with or without attribution. Now, I'll just say that when you quote somebody in a legal document, you're supposed to cite whom you are quoting. Otherwise, it smells like plagiarism. But, of course, you can't charge a Supreme Court justice with plagiarism. The only thing you can do with a Supreme Court justice is impeach the person, and that's another thing that's not going to happen anytime soon. Okay? Dennis Prager is a right-wing POS who runs another sketchy Trump University-like thing called Prager University. And it absolutely means nothing, and beyond meaning nothing, it probably isn't even remotely true. People are not minimized by the fact that a government is large enough to attend to the business of that government. You know, all these idiot maggots and white wingers and libertarians and booger eaters generally like to talk about small government, but what they really mean by that is, I don't want government that responds to anybody but the people I think government should respond to. Because they don't want a government small enough, well, to not be able to get the check out to their old sainted white granny. It's just other people that they think don't necessarily need that Social Security check. And we know what I mean by other people. Now, Dorff took apart this stupid citation from, uncredited citation from Brett Kavanaugh. He wrote, "The claim is false insofar as it asserts a linear relationship between the size of government and the ability of individuals to flourish. Ask Hobbes, not the cartoon, but the philosopher, how well individuals do when one shrinks government down to nothing. The claim conflates government size and its reach. Government could be large in terms of taxes or spending, gross domestic product ratio, but small in its intrusion on people's lives. Welfare states need not be, and generally have not been, totalitarian states." I will add to that that we should probably jot that little thing down. It is sometimes said that the bigger the government, the smaller the individual. Well, there's nothing much smaller than a blastocyst or a zygote or an embryo. But by God, you never hear these white wingers complaining about big government when they're talking about crawling right up the birth canal to take a peep around inside the womb of a woman to make sure that she's properly carrying a fertilized egg like Jesus wants her to. Now, that's a big government they can live with. Not even live with. That's a big government they, by God, want. They want a government big enough to to build massive machines and engines of war. They want a government big enough to meet the needs of the poor, struggling corporations. Because they always need tax cuts and the like. Yeah, right. The smaller the individual. Well, I guess a big government can see all the way down to the... Right. But then again, I guess, and I can only guess because, you know, I'm me. If I was a woman, I think I'd feel pretty small in my own right if big government was saying they wanted to manage the workings of my reproductive organs. I'd feel so small, I might not even feel like a citizen. I might feel like, I don't know, 3/5 of a citizen. Yeah, I mean, you get what I... Yeah? You too? In regard to Dennis Prager, Jack in Shreveport writes, wait a sec, doesn't that dude have something to do with the turning point thing you mentioned, I think, yesterday before? Yes, yes. Turning Point USA's event sponsors have included Prager University, the National Ruble Association, the Heritage Foundation, the Job Creators Network, and the Leadership Institute for Alliance Defending Freedom. Right you are, Jack. And by the way, just because this is so goddamn funny, I can hardly stand it, we should probably take note of the fact that maggots... No, this is not a joke. I am not making this up. I saw this earlier today on Twitter. Yesterday evening, at Tracy's request, I delved into that story of the little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby who turned out to be such a racist, Harvard decided to rescind his acceptance. Remember that? Yeah. Well, apparently now, the maggots, really, because funny, the maggots are boycotting Harvard. Yeah, really. They're boycotting Harvard. I'm not sure how. Are they gonna not go to the Harvard Crimson's football games? Are they not gonna pack the stands when Harvard plays basketball? Are there little maggot children who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings going to not go to Harvard, and they're going to go to maybe Prager University instead? I guess. Okay. That ought to be fun. That ought to be a real hoot. Yeah. What's that? Flavio says, Prager University, a couple of paragraphs from Rational Wiki. George Orwell's fictionalized world where Big Brother reigns supreme is no longer a figment of the imagination, but a prophetic vision of present-day threats. Big tech is making Orwell's 1984 a 21st century reality. That's from a Prager University video that runs as an ad before YouTube videos. No, really. Now, it features guest hosts like Jonah Goldberg, super genius. It's not quite as big a con as, say, Trump University, but it's close enough for government work. Ron and Raleigh, just in case you wanted to know, Paul Ryan, after leaving Congress, joined the board of directors of the Fox Network. After that, he became a faculty member at Notre Dame. Really high standards there at Notre Dame these days. Yeah, no, not so much. I don't know if they can just keep the faculty from committing rape. Maybe that's a win. Steve in New York, the line sometimes said, sounds Foxian to me. Some people say. It is sometimes said. Yeah, let me know. I tell you what, I'm going to keep an eye out, you know, maybe next time I stop at Popeyes or something like that. See if there's a skinny meth head looking dude walking around with a the bigger the government, the smaller the individual tattoo on the side of his neck. That seems to be they're a good marker species for the expansion of white wing so-called intellect. Boycotting Harvard, Steve in New York says they're going to cancel their Harvard Law Review subscriptions and start reading the Yale Law Review. Of course, because, you know, Yale, that's the dear old Bushy alma mater. Scott says that unattributed Ayn Rand quote is stupid. The bigger the government, the smaller the individual. It's actually Dennis Prager, but anyway. It made me think of the late 1960s commercial for Winston Super Kings. It's not how long you make it, it's how you make it long. Both lines are slogans designed to market something that, in the long run, will prove to not be particularly, you know, good for you. Right. I had a note from Lady B a few minutes ago, going back to Addison McConnell and his super genius remarks on reparations. We elected a black president, and that solved racism? Wow. That totally exonerates the country from years of Jim Crow laws, segregation, Tuskegee experiments, employment discrimination, redlining, substandard inner-city schools, gerrymandering, biased incarceration rates, and police shootings of unarmed black boys and men. Gosh, who would have thought 55 years and the election of Obama would have totally made black Americans whole on the completely competitive level of most white Americans? I'm going to go out and buy 50 acres of Kentucky land and some horses with money the bank will loan me right in the rich white neighborhoods. I'm sure they'll welcome me since they all willingly voted for Obama. I ain't got good collateral, but that's okay. Now that I'm on a par with white folks, they'll just hand it over to me based on my ethnicity. After all, if I'm just like a white person, who needs to prove my trustworthiness? Why need to prove my trustworthiness? Thanks, Senator Graham, for letting me know, actually, Senator McConnell, for letting me know that blacks are finally on equal par with white Americans. Rest well, Kentucky neighbors. I'll bring my cousins Pookie and downtown Leroy with me. We all is going to have a good time. Shit will be lit. And see, that's the hilarious thing about the white wing in this country. If you say reparations, they start worrying about money. They don't worry about any of the things that that Lady B brings up here. The century plus of deliberately racist incarceration, redlining in neighborhoods, inability to access decent housing generally, segregation, separate and highly unequal school systems. Yeah, right. Got it. But no, they don't want to look at that either. That's why there can't even be a commission. Can you imagine? And there's a good another good argument for having taking back the Senate in 2020. Because it would probably be worth the trouble, and it's not, I'm not even talking about trouble. It would be worth the effort to debate a reparations study in the Senate, if for no other reason than to stoke the stroke for Addison McConnell, to see that pasty, doughy face slowly turn from pink to blood red to purple, and watch the spit bubbles form on his lips as he began to shriek and howl about how unfair it all is to him and other white Republican Americans to even try to begin to conceptualize and make plain and obvious for the entire nation exactly how evil slavery had been and all of its aftermath. David in South Carolina, Stan notes, boycott, because their Hamilton boycott totally brought Hamilton down. Yeah, show's closed, not running on Broadway, it's not touring the country or anything. I mean, the maggots boycotted Hamilton, and well, Lin-Manuel Miranda has been as hard to find as Amelia Earhart. Right. Sure. So there's more Moran Monday, not Moran Monday, more Titanic Tuesday, more Trump-tanic Tuesday on the way. We will take a slightly extended break. Fortunately, because it's Tuesday, we have the Green News Report to tide us over. And then I'll be back after a little bit of dead air. This is The Horn. We're trying to knock down from 785 and 285. There's 285 to go on the Have a Week on Me challenge, 785 to go to get caught up to this evening, and then the rest of the week to deal with, and we'll be done with fundraising for May. Okay? So maybe some of that will happen during the break. In the meantime, let's see what Brad and Desi are up to.
It's Tuesday, June 18, 2019.
The outage knocked out all of Argentina and Uruguay and affected other countries in the region like Paraguay, Chile, and Brazil.
Lights out for the power grid in South America. U.S. military reportedly escalates cyber intrusions into Russia's power grid. Gulf of Mexico dead zone set to be record size this year. Plus,
we have a moral duty to leave this world in a better condition than what we inherited.
The U.K. commits to the most aggressive climate target in the world.
All of those targets hit and otherwise straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Some people think that you can either have low emissions or economic growth. That's not the case.
Some people like the President of the United States, Prime Minister Theresa May. I'll send him your regards. This is your Green News Report.
You can lower emissions and have economic growth at the same time.
Okay, Desi Doyen, several troubling stories concerning electric grids around the world today.
Indeed. In South America, electricity has been partially restored after a widespread massive blackout hit Argentina and neighboring countries like Uruguay, Paraguay, Chile, and Brazil on Sunday. It affected nearly 50 million people. The cause is under investigation, but officials blamed it on a massive failure in the country's interconnected electric grid. Argentina's energy Secretary said he does not believe a cyber attack was the cause, but it has not been ruled out.
Are electric grids around the world as fragile as ours seem to be here in the U.S.?
Yes, many are quite decrepit and have not had the kind of maintenance that they should have in order to stay functional. And the question of a cyber attack is important. Argentina's blackout hit on the heels of a New York Times report that the U.S. military cyber command is escalating intrusions into the Russian power grid, inserting potentially crippling malware, according to anonymous current and former government officials, as, quote, a warning to Putin. The report adds to rising concerns over government's abilities to disrupt other nations' power systems. Previous reports in the last 2 years suggest that both the Russian and Chinese governments have successfully planted malware into the United States' aging interconnected electric grid and other critical systems that could sabotage American power plants, oil and gas pipelines, and water systems.
Oh, this is all going very well. Is that the story that they did not want to tell Donald Trump the full details? Because they were worried that he would share them with Russia?
That is exactly the same story.
What fun.
In other news, federal scientists warn the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico this summer will be one of the largest on record, in part turbocharged by climate change. The Gulf dead zone occurs every summer when nutrient runoff, mostly from excessive fertilizer use on farms in the Midwest, drains into the Gulf, triggering an algae bloom that depletes oxygen in the water, suffocating marine life, which in turn reduces catches for the Gulf fishing industry. The dead zone is extra big this year because of record rainfall across the Midwest that has swept even more nutrient pollution into the Gulf. Heavy rainfall events in the United States have increased as much as 70% since the 1950s due to global warming. In an interview with NPR, marine ecologist Nancy Rabelais of Louisiana State University says the industrial agriculture industry could help by reducing fertilizer and manure runoff.
The answer is well upstream, and it includes stopping or mitigating the nitrogen that's getting into the Mississippi River. And there are all kinds of improved agricultural practices that can be applied.
But there's more. NOAA scientists also believe the Midwest floods may be killing dolphins in the Gulf, where they've recorded more than triple the usual number of dead dolphins since February that are showing signs of exposure to fresh water, most likely from those Midwest floods. Another example of the multiple and varied ways that man-made global warming is altering all kinds of systems, including ocean health as well.
Boy, we really suck, don't we?
Finally, though, some good news. Outgoing UK Prime Minister Theresa May has committed the United Kingdom to reaching a legally binding target of net zero carbon emissions by 2050.
Nice of her to do on the way out the door.
She's putting the UK on the path to be the first major economy to put that goal into law. May acknowledged to the BBC that cutting the UK's contribution to man-made climate change is a monumental task.
We have a moral duty to leave this world in a better condition than what we inherited. And that's why today we're announcing that we will be ending our contribution to climate change by 2050 and legislating for a net zero emissions target. Now, this is an ambitious target, but it's one that it's crucial that we achieve. And it will take us working across the whole breadth of society to do that.
And she goes on to say that it is not a choice between saving the planet and boosting our economy. We can do both. Of course, easy for them to say. They're Great Britain. They can do anything. The U.S., apparently not so much. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So, yeah, like I said, there would be a little bit of dead air, but we survived it, I'm proud to say. This is the horn for the 18th day of June, 2019. And thanks going out at the top of the hour to Timothy. Thank you, Timothy, very, very kindly. You may have even met Tim in the chat room from time to time. We've taken it down to 255 on the Have a Week on Me challenge and 755 to come even with the evening. And by the way, from a technological standpoint, somehow or another, assuming that the magic continues to work, we have both the stress line available to us this evening, 844-843-4676, and we have Skype. How about that? We have Skype available to us, the usual Bob Kincaid Horn. I've seen messages come through, so apparently I'm signed in there, even though I didn't really realize it, but I think I am. So if you want to try that, you're welcome to as well, and we'll see how that works out. Oh, by the way, coming out of Los Angeles, a little bit of fun we may have overlooked in all the maggotry. Duncan Hunter just barely squeaked back into Congress in the last election. And he had already been, I think, by the time of the election, he'd already been indicted for misuse of campaign funds. They used it for things like the kids' school lunches. That's what his wife did. And then Duncan Hunter, to use some rather oblique language, said that he used some campaign funds to facilitate certain personal relationships with others. That comes from the plea deal that Margaret Hunter, Duncan Hunter's wife, entered in federal court, about 6 days ago. Yeah. He tried to explain away the typical Republican skullduggery and dirty dealing by saying, "When I went away to Iraq in 2003 the first time, I gave her power of attorney. She handled my finances throughout my entire military career, and that continued on when I got into Congress. She was also the campaign manager, so whatever she did, that'll be looked at too, I'm sure, but I didn't do it." He comes from an area of California, I think, called Alpine. But his wife has pled out to one felony count of illegally spending campaign funds, or conspiring to do it with hubby. And it all turned on about $250,000 in campaign funds over the course of 6 years. Okay. Now, she and Duncan, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republicans that they are, they were facing something on the order of 60 counts of violations of the U.S. Code. Mrs. Hunter is looking at about a five-year stretch in the care, custody, and control of the United States Bureau of Prisons. But there's a possibility, according to a piece in the L.A. Times, that if she continues to roll like a wagon wheel on her husband, she may not do any jail time at all. She'll be sentenced in San Diego on September the 16th. He, Duncan Hunter, on the other hand, will go to trial on September the 10th. And, well, he's been a very, very good little maggot. And I guess maybe he's hoping for one of those fun little presidential pardons from Nitwit Nero. But she's given up a lot of documents to the federal government, Mrs. Hunter has. Now, here's the thing. That's just $250K over 6 years. We all know I don't cipher particularly well, so let's get out the calculator. Let's see, 250,000 divided by 6 equals, that's about $41,666.66 per annum. You know how when we talk about criminal activity by Donald Trump, you'll often have you'll often hear the maggots say, "Well, I mean, obstruction of justice, now, that ain't nothing. Them's is process crimes, is what them's is." Well. You know what's not a process crime? violations of federal election laws are not process crimes. And as I read the story of Mrs. Hunter's plea deal, I couldn't help but be reminded of the, what was it? Okay, so that's $41,000 a year for 6 years, for, to the tune of $250,000. Is it just me, or did, in fact, Donald Trump direct payments to be made illegally to a pair of porn stars to the in the amount of, what was it, $264,000 total? Have I got that right? Because, see, if what Mrs. Hunter did is illegal, well, it sort of jibes with the, I think, more than 1,000 former U.S. attorneys and assistant U.S. attorneys and deputy U.S. attorneys who signed that letter saying the only reason Donald Trump is not being prosecuted, tried, and probably imprisoned is because we've got this screwed up notion that the president is above the law. Because remember, these are all dealings not coming out of the Mueller investigation, but instead out of the ordinary workmanlike day-to-day operations of the United States District Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, wherein Michael Cohen was prosecuted, pled guilty, and wherein reference was made to the President of the United States. Not as an unindicted co-conspirator, because that language is so 1970s and so Nixonian, but instead simply referred to as individual one. Yeah, individual one. If you can prosecute Margaret Hunter, you can prosecute, well, Donald Trump, at least after he gets out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Hopefully, at some point, Duncan Hunter will either resign or be removed from the House of Representatives. And then, well, we still have the same questions to answer in regard to Donald Trump. But then again, when you consider the language that came out of, what was it, the Gamble case that we talked about yesterday with Slappy Thomas, saying that precedent should simply be done away with on an ad hoc basis to serve nothing more than the most tawdry of political goals. And then you get that bizarre language from Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah, I think it's a safe bet that if the Supreme Court did rule on the indictability of a sitting president, it would not work out to our benefit, or to that of the Constitution's or the Republic's. In regard to Duncan Hunter, Scott in San Diego points out, the California 50th Congressional District is the eastern portion of San Diego County, otherwise known as Crazy Town. His daddy owned it for years, and he's a disingenuous putz as well. P.S., Scott adds, he didn't win by very much in 2018. No, it was slim indeed. But I guess that district prefers a felonious Republican to an honest, or, well, hopefully, honest Democrat. So much Trump-tanic wisdom this evening. By the way, the Orlando Sentinel, in advance of the White Wing Hate Fest taking place this evening in Orlando, published an op-ed. They said, "We've seen enough." And offered an official presidential endorsement for the election in 2020. The endorsement, simply put, is not Donald Trump. The Sentinel's editorial board wrote, "Some readers will wonder how we could possibly eliminate a candidate so far before an election and before knowing the identity of his opponent. Because there's no point pretending we would ever recommend that readers vote for Donald Trump. After 2.5 years, we've seen enough. Enough of the chaos, the division, the schoolyard insults, the self-aggrandizement, the corruption, and especially the lies. So many lies, from white lies to whoppers, told out of ignorance, laziness, recklessness, expedience, or opportunity. The nation must endure another 1.5 years of Trump. But it needn't suffer another 4 beyond that. We can do better. We have to do better." And that really is, we have to. Otherwise, there may very well be no coming back from what would transpire in another 4 years of Donald Trump. I had a note right before airtime from Lady B. The subject line was, "Is Trump mentally fit?" Because last night in the program, I brought up the fact that I've come to the conclusion that it's not just dementia. There may be some dementia at work. Who knows? It might be tertiary syphilis. But long before any of that happened, I think that he is simply developmentally delayed. He is intellectually, cerebrally, mentally slow, or what in a former era was referred to as retarded, which means slow. Lady B said, "Several times during your show, the question comes up about Trump's sanity. But what's even more interesting is whether he was ever even mentally fit to begin with. I came across a paper one night while going down the Wikipedia rabbit hole. One of the cases they discuss is of a man who was being charged with a serious crime. He was able to convince his lawyers to let him engage in nearly impossible tasks, despite him being considered mentally unfit. Quote, mitigation specialist Charlotte Holdman recalled a client who so successfully hid his retardation from his attorneys that he allowed them to sign him up for college-level calculus classes, which he could not comprehend. He had gone through much of his schooling, allowing his younger sister to complete his homework for him. When he was given papers to read in connection to his case, he would carefully stare at them. If he was asked a substantive question, he usually responded, 'I don't recall.' Only when experts in retardation evaluated him and investigators reviewed his school records and spoke to his family did lawyers discover he had mental retardation and had been considered slow since his early childhood." That comes from 2001. Human Rights Watch, Beyond Reason, Mental Retardation, an Overview. Lady B says, "I guess my point is, dementia aside, I don't think Trump is necessarily mentally disabled. However, I do believe he has a lower IQ than most people think. And like the example above, he's just smart enough to be able to manipulate other people into doing what he wants. It's hard to know why we fall for stuff like that. Maybe it's out of pity. Or maybe most of us are in such disbelief that a man so incompetent can seem to be doing so well that we, ever the bemused, enable it, completely oblivious to the fact that we're normalizing abnormal behavior. Either way, there's something going on with his mind, and it's not good for any of us. So, should future presidents be subjected to competency tests? On the surface, that question seems absurd. A candidate's abilities and mental capacities should be well known and understood way before they get that far. At the most, we'd probably discover a lot of sociopaths among them. But Trump has now shaken up all the norms. He's proven once and for all that when you're rich and famous, you can do anything. Even convince the masses that their very naked emperor is indeed wearing the nicest clothes of all. And again, I offer in support of this argument the fact that one of the things that he wanted to make absolutely certain that Michael Cohen buried was any IQ testing that he had ever undergone. And really, the rich part does play a tremendous role in it. The rich part may be the biggest part. Because when you consider, for instance, the day after she tweeted about how Alabama values every life as sacred, Governor Kay Ivey of Alabama signed the death warrant for a young man condemned to death who was, if I recall correctly, not particularly intelligent and was in fact slow. We execute people like that, unfortunately, far more than probably most Americans would like to acknowledge. And getting to the question that that Lady B asks, should we have competency testing for presidents? You know, are you going to ask every presidential candidate to sit down and go through a mental fitness assessment? I don't see that ever happening. But there is language, and we've gone over it before. There's language in the 25th Amendment, what I call the Woodrow Wilson clause. No, I called it something else, but I can't remember offhand. Oh, that's worrisome. But in the 25th Amendment, in Section 4, there's a reference to how we go about removing a president from office who is unfit to fulfill the duties thereof. And in the 25th Amendment, in Paragraph 4. Is the giveaway. Now, we're going to have as a sort of a condition precedent to all of this, the fact that none of this can ever happen without a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic President. If Republicans are involved, it simply will not happen. But we're going to have to reach a national consensus at whatever point this nightmare presidency ends. We're going to have to reach a consensus that it can never be allowed to happen again. And since we seem to be hell-bent on trotting off down a road that we have never trod before in the history of this nation, this republic, that is, electing soon-to-be octogenarians president, and that applies to a number of candidates right now, Donald Trump will be near an octogenarian if he completes a second term. I know, the horror, the horror. Either Bernie or Biden would become an octogenarian within less, I think within 2 years of their first term in office, and we have never had one of those. It was one of those unwritten understandings that we used to have in this country. I know, we've had a bunch of unwritten understandings. Some of them were complete bullshit. For the biggest part of the existence of our country, we've had an unwritten understanding that black people could not be president and that women could not be president. Obviously, those are anachronisms that have got to go, and in one case have gone, in the other, not yet. But it has been a general understanding that people who do not have a reasonable expectation of a whole lot of life in them, octogenarians, probably ought not be president. But if we're going to be doing this, and it looks like we are, unless something really big changes over the next, between now and the first few primaries, and by that we mean, 6-7 months, seven, maybe eight, then we need to be prepared for what happens when, not if, we have a president who ceases to be able to mentally function. We're getting a little bit better. We have gotten a little bit better over time at describing and determining and diagnosing the onset of dementia, and in particular the onset of Alzheimer's disease. And I mean no stigma. I mean to attach no stigma to any of that. It can happen to any of us. And for most of us, it is a horror that we can scarcely even imagine facing. Especially if we have seen a loved one go through it. But we seem to be hell-bent to go down this road of making people president who don't have much life left in them. And so we're going to have to get really, really comfortable and familiar with the language of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments, and this is the important phrase, clause, or of such other body as Congress may by law provide. Now, with the experience of having watched the cabinet in the Trump regime toady along and bootlick and lick spittle for a man who is obviously unfit to be in the office, it becomes incumbent upon a Congress, and again, it's going to have to be a Democratic Congress because a Republican Congress would never do anything like this. Congress must provide for an other body to assess presidential fitness to fulfill the duties of the office. If we don't, we're going to descend into a form of madness and chaos that we can scarcely even imagine. And what I mean by that, for those of us old enough, you remember the old Soviet Union? Remember how every now and then they'd make some 80-year-old the head of the party, and then you wouldn't hear from him for 6 months, and everybody would start speculating as to whether or not it was time for a new Soviet premier. And you remember how everybody got nervous when that happened? Because you didn't know what was coming next, and you never knew when somebody who was really woohoo, woohoo, was going to get their hands on the Soviet nuclear football.
Football.
For the people who were really close to those situations, it was nerve-wracking and terrifying. Mostly, we sat at home and watched Walter Cronkite or Howard K. Smith or those folks and just sort of hoped that the Arkelian battle cruiser really wasn't hovering above Earth waiting to zap us into vapor in 30 minutes galactic in a galactic standard hour. So there needs to be a conversation about what that such other body as Congress may by law provide would consist of. Maybe it would be a general practitioner, an internist, a pulmonologist, a cardiologist, a psychiatrist, a neurologist. Who would periodically review the mental health and physical health of the president. Because, and this is the chilling part, at this point in time, we are at the mercy of the turning hands on a clock. That's all we got. The debate about whether or not to impeach Donald Trump is entirely academic, because it is not going to result in anything but Donald Trump going on being president. I will happily put a $5 bill up against just about anybody who is willing to part with a $5 bill on the notion that if he is impeached, that somehow or another there will be 24 Republican senators. Got to make up for Joe Manchin, remember. 24 Republican senators who will vote to remove him from office. Ain't going to happen. We are at the mercy of the leaves of the calendar and the hands of the clock. And whenever we awaken from this nightmare, we're still going to be in the same sort of shape for so long as Congress has not, by law, provided for such other body. I mean, Jesus, for whatever it was, at least the Soviets... I mean, imagine this. I'm prefacing a statement by saying at least the Soviets had a means of perhaps removing a bad leader, or at least poisoning one, maybe, and finding a new octogenarian to do the job. I know it was a long time ago, but do you remember how surprised we were when Mikhail Gorbachev showed up and was actually a guy in his 50s or early 60s? In Soviet leader terms, he was a fucking toddler. So... I thought it might be worthwhile to consider that reality. Monique asks, when are white people going to take responsibility for their racism, making a reality show moron their president? Well, we're talking there about 52% of white American women. I'm not sure what the number is on white American men. It's equally high, or probably higher, terrifyingly so. And if the question is not rhetorical, Monique, I will hazard an answer. And that answer is either never, or when it begins to actually impact them. Because in the case of the latter, it's happening here and there, little by little. Every now and then you'll see a news story about somebody who has finally felt the real world impacts of having Donald Trump as president land on them and ruin them. Sometimes, then, they learn. But then again, if you were watching MSNBC last night and you saw the Chris Matthews Dayton, Ohio thing, you'll know that there are some, they went to great pains to find themselves some maggots who would probably let him pee on them and maybe even shit and be absolutely convinced that they were, that America was greater because that had just transpired. So, yeah, that. And this program is not big enough to start movements. Mostly what we can do is point out how right we've been about things well in advance of others. But that language in Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, is critical to the future, such as it may be, of the United States of America. Such other body as Congress may, by law, provide. Ron adds in, how about age limits on senators? DiFi's 86, she'll be 92 when this term ends, and I'll bet she'll run again if she ain't dead. I oppose term limits in all their forms because they are the height of anti-democratic ideas. We never should have term limited the President of the United States. We got that constitutional amendment only because the Republicans were throwing a fit because they had been forced to live in the goddamn wilderness so long and been kept out of the White House and therefore kept their filthy little mitts out of the treasure chest for so long by not getting to be president. The word Senate comes from the Latin senex, which means old. The Senate was designed to be a place for people who were old and had slowed down and had not the benefit of youthful vigor, but instead the benefit that comes with the wisdom of age. So I'm not going to sit here and tell the people of California that they can't have a 96-year-old senator if that's what they want. I mean, I think back to Strom Thurmond. And usually, you know, usually they don't last that long. That's still an extraordinarily old, long life. Remember, the life expectancy on average in the United States at its highest is just one county away from me here. In Fairfax County, Virginia. We've been talking about this over the course of our work in the House this week. The highest life expectancy in the United States is, 82, 84? Average. The wealthier you are, the longer you're probably going to live. The poorer you are, the earlier you're probably going to die. And nothing, of course, makes that clearer than the fact that there's 350 miles difference between Fairfax County, Virginia, and McDowell County, West Virginia. Average life expectancy in Fairfax, 82, change. Average life expectancy in McDowell County, West Virginia, just 6 months longer than a person's life expectancy in Haiti, which is the lowest life expectancy in the entire Western Hemisphere. 64. Haiti at 63.5. Any better? We better strap in. And I don't mean just until Trump is gone. A country with a passion for putting people with not a lot of life left in them into the White House is not a vibrant democracy or anything resembling it. So I guess, I mean, like I said, I'm trying to stick to my I'm not going to trash other candidates pledge, but I don't have any problem saying that, and again, my primary rolls around in May of 2020. There's every reason in the world to believe it will be all over but the shouting by then. But I will not vote for Joe Biden in the primary. I still understand and I still maintain the fact that primaries are for your heart. General elections, you use your brain. I can't tell you who I'm going to vote for in the primary except to say it will not be Joe Biden. Because in my estimation, this country is not well served by having a president who's older than television. Or a president who is older than, a rotary phone? A president who was born when this country was still picking up the earpiece and yelling into the mouthpiece, Central, get me Juanita down to the Bluebird Diner. I don't think it's a good idea. I think Trump is a worse idea. If it's Biden versus Trump, I'm voting Biden. A 20 mule team couldn't make me vote for some idiot greenie or dipshit third party candidate. But in the primary, I'm voting probably alongside a lot of young people who have a lot more life to expect in this country than a great deal of the people running for the presidency. Don't get me wrong, says Ron and Raleigh, I don't think they should be term limited in the Senate. I think they would be well served to wake the fuck up and pass the torch. I wouldn't let most 92-year-olds operate the remote control or drive a car, much less run the country. And you know what? If the Senate depended on being able to drive a car, use the remote control, and then there's the run the country part. But you have to go back to the attitudes and the philosophies of the framers in designing the House and Senate the way they did. The House was going to be elected by direct democracy. it was going to be cantankerous and contentious. And nobody, and we weren't going to let them stick around for very long. The Senate, on the other hand, was originally to be appointed by the governors of the several states. It took an amendment to the Constitution to provide for the direct election of senators. And by the way, just because it's fun to think about things like this, there is still a movement inside the Republican Party that says that the popular vote for members of the United States Senate should be done away with, and that political hack governors should go back to appointing senators, because that worked ever so well. Oh, that's a great line. James in Illinois reminds me of, "Phone's dead. Did you crank it?" Well, when Joe Biden was born, we weren't that far from the hand-cranked telephone. And what's that, is that Monique? Well, I'm not going to share that on the air, but I understand the sentiment entirely. Joe was born November 20th, 1942, says Scott. TV began in England in 1936. In the U.S., TV in an experimental form dates back to the 1920s. I'm talking about mainstream television. I'm not talking about that video, that TV footage of the opening of the 1936 Berlin Olympics that was part of the movie Contact. I'm talking about the TV where TV became a ubiquitous part of American life. And Joe is older than that. Just is. It's not ageism. That's mathism. That's arithmeticism. And you know what? If Biden were able to go out and run a 4-minute goddamn mile tomorrow morning, I wouldn't feel any better because of the natural processes that take place within the human body, which keep us from... I mean, how many times have I said it on this program? Humanity might be a much smarter species if we live to be 500 or 600 years old. What if instead of having right-wing turds like Clarence Thomas and Kavanaugh and Alito prattling on about the intent of the framers, what if you could just ring up Mr. Madison? What if you could ring... I mean, hell, he'd probably be sitting on the Supreme Court. He wrote the goddamn thing. Marshall would still be there. Hey, Jimmy, did you really mean for the president to be above the law? I can't understand your accent, Mr. Madison. Oh, that's how it sounds when you yell, "Fuck no." Okay, got it. But we don't live that long. I mean, who knew? Who fucking knew that Jimmy Carter could have run for president again and been a better president than Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, and maybe even Barack Obama, and sure as shit, Donald Trump? But that is a statistical anomaly. And not a very great likelihood. There, that, terrace. Yes, absolutely. I don't have my cowbell with me. If we lived for another 50 years, if our lifespan was 50 years longer than what it is, the global climate catastrophe wouldn't be a thing. If we had people from 1800 who could tell us what the world was like then versus what it became after we started burning every hydrocarbon we could lay our filthy, grubby little hands on, yeah, we probably would have been transitioning toward wind and solar a hell of a lot sooner. And by the way, I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. I had a message from Silent R. Lamar early in the program. And Silent R. Lamar is proposing to knock out like a half a month's fundraising if we can wipe out the rest of what we've got going on. And that would be huge because that would take us into mid-July and secure our ability to do Netroots Nation. So just let me know your thoughts on that. And if I said it wrong, Silent R. Lamar, please tell me. But that would be tremendous if we could make that happen. As it stands, we've got, what did I say, 655? No. Yeah, 655 to go on the to come even with the evening. And 255 to go to finish off the Have a Week on Me challenge by our anonymous member of the community. That's tremendous. I'm going to wrap up here in a couple of minutes. I'm doing two-hour programs simply because it's kind of weird and uncomfortable working like this in a hotel room. But nonetheless, we're getting some program time in, but Scott's got something he wants to offer by way of expanding the program. So let's do that first, assuming that he's there. Are you there, Scott?
Hey, Bob, I am here. Are you there?
Well, if you heard me, I am.
Okay, well, good. Weird and uncomfortable in a hotel room. Bob, I think we both know that the probability is quite high that there have been weirder and more uncomfortable things done in many hotel rooms.
Oh, I have no doubt.
than what you're doing there. I can think of a couple hotel rooms I was in where things along those lines occurred. But you,
well, I'm trying to be a grown-up about things here.
You won't know about it till my book comes out. And that may be the only hope. I've got to write a book and become rich overnight, more or less. Listen, I know you need to go in a few minutes, and I won't keep you long. But here's something to ponder as you drift off to lullaby land tonight and in the days and weeks ahead. Isn't there something more that goes into the equation of picking a chief executive for the nation than just age? And the reason I pose it that way is...
I hope I'm not conveying the idea that age is all that matters.
Well, I don't think you are, and I know that that's not what I'm picking up, but I was thinking back, and I'm pretty sure it was Strom Thurmond. They were doing a hearing about something about the Internet or something, and the witness was there at the table across from the panel of esteemed senators, and Strom said something along the line of, talking to the machine. Somebody didn't turn their mic on, to express it to the witness, Strom Thurmond, at 90-some years of age, I think the oldest senator we've ever had, you know, is imploring
but
the witness.
But Byrd was the longest serving, I think.
Yeah, he may have been. He may have been. But, I mean, I know these are public figures, and we only see them in public. But if that has anything to do with it, and God knows I'm not necessarily defending Biden, but what is the cutoff limit in terms of age? I mean, Elizabeth Warren, for whatever it's worth, I think is 69. Now, she's only, as of today, is only 4 years older than me. And I have health issues, and I'm not running for president. But, you know, in this country especially, at one time...
Well, that's why I framed it the way I did, Scott. Because okay. the question that Lady B asked was, do we now have to have some sort of competency exam for presidential candidates? And that's hopelessly unworkable. If nothing else, the process itself is grinding enough that it will expose flaws. I mean, God knows it exposed Trump. The only problem being, they elected him. Well, they didn't elect him anyway.
Well, I don't think
that's the anachronism of the Electoral College. But just to flesh out what I was going for 25th Amendment purposes, we're eventually going to have to start using it. Okay, and I'm not even saying it in regard to Trump. Okay, but if we're going to go down this road of having octogenarian presidents, somebody's going to have to step in and say, by the way, hate to tell you, the president has Alzheimer's.
Well, but to address Lady B's query, and it's a good question in today's world to be posing. I don't think it would be in the form of a sit down at your desk and pick up your number two pencil when the big hand reaches the 12 on the clock and the proctor instructs you. I don't think it would be that type of test. But isn't that part of, I know it's a multi-responsibility situation, but doesn't the media have some responsibility in terms of telling us about these candidates? I mean, I didn't
relish
voting.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're always optimistic, but that's a level of wishful thinking. I mean, because...
I'm not wishing, I'm asking.
They've got all kinds of obligations that they don't fulfill.
And I didn't particularly relish voting again for our senator.
Feinstein.
Dianne Feinstein at age, what, 92?
86.
86. I didn't particularly relish voting for her this last time. But she was the person who won the opportunity to run. I know that she was opposed by a Republican, but that guy, if the choice came down between she and he, I mean, he was I forget his name.
Oh, he was knucking futz.
Exactly. You know, but what I'm saying is there's a broader spectrum in which to make the judgment.
But what I'm trying to get through here, because I feel like I didn't convey the idea, that language exists in the 25th Amendment to have what for Congress to create a commission on presidential fitness that is a permanently standing committee and figure out some way to take it outside the realm of politics. Because, like I said, if we're going to start having 80-year-old presidents, one of them is going to be an 80-year-old president with Alzheimer's. Maybe not this one. You know, it's like Humphrey Bogart to Ingrid Bergman at the end of Casablanca. Maybe not now, but someday and for the rest of your life.
Well, I think back to, at one time, the youngest president that we ever elected in this country in 1960, John Kennedy. That man had a fucked up back due to a war injury. He had Addison's disease. There was another issue that he had that was life threatening. You know, it was
Lincoln wasn't
merciful.
Lincoln wasn't that old, and the guy was in miserable physical condition.
Yeah, didn't he try to treat himself for something?
And he took Blue Mass, which was a patent remedy for gut problems, whose primary constituent ingredient was mercury.
Yeah, which is not a good thing to ingest.
But again, in both the case of Kennedy and of Lincoln, there's no 25th Amendment. We have a tool that we can start using that we need to use. The 25th Amendment. Because we're going to need it.
Well, and one more question about the, you know, I forget the exact language, but the essence of it was a duly constituted body as chosen by, as deemed by Congress. What, isn't that an entirely different branch of government? And wouldn't there be pushback that the Congress or a portion thereof is making a determination about a co-equal branch? I'm just wondering aloud here. I mean, I understand that the Congress's job is oversight and money, okay? But that only extends to a certain point, if I understand the different branches, and I may not.
Well, no. Well, as Monique says, you know, it's not age with Trump. He's a treasonous person. I personally think he is developmentally slow. What used to be called retarded.
Yeah.
But the 25th Amendment, having that body would not be sufficient to... Let me explain it as best I can. The 25th Amendment, Section 4, is set up so that a cabinet that sees a president go off the rails can act as long as the vice president is willing to act. But that turns out to be no better an idea than Alexander Hamilton saying, listen, we're going to have this electoral college, and if it turns out that the people, the popular vote, they elect a total shithead, well, the electors will come in and go, no shitheads for you. And they'll elect somebody sane to be president. That has never, ever, ever worked that way in the history of the United States. And so, too, with the idea in the 25th Amendment that a cabinet would be more patriotic than political and would say, oh, okay, man, he's around the bend. I mean, he's out there running naked on the South Lawn. I mean, yeah, we got to do something. And the vice president was, oh, okay. And then the letter-writing campaign starts. Go read the 25th Amendment, Section 4, because it starts a letter-writing campaign. In this instance, however, if you had a group, and Congress could take it, you know, by virtue of the fact that they've got the power to create this body, Congress could say this is the body that will make these decisions, not the goddamn cabinet, and they will report to the vice president. And then it's in the vice president's court.
But if you've got, in this case, if you've got somebody like Pence, he's not going to take away the keys. It's like old people.
Oh, yes, he would. Oh, yes, he would. Oh, yes, he would. Jesus has been telling him for years, and Jesus' daddy, that the reason he's in politics is to be president someday.
Yeah, but thinking it and saying it, that's not doing it.
Oh, by the way, there's a correction. In 2018, Dianne Feinstein, was opposed by another Democrat, Kevin DeLeon. Unfortunately, DiFi won as expected. So
yeah,
it was not a nut job.
No, but the guy who was running against her that didn't get enough votes to appear on the ballot, because we have that thing out here in California.
The jungle primary, I get it.
Yeah.
But before we run off down that garden path, I'm just gonna tidy this up and end things. And by the way, thanks to Ralps for taking us down to 230 to go on the Have a Week on Me challenge, and 630 to go, I think, to finish this evening. And that'll go up again tomorrow. But
Silent R's challenge was what again?
Well, Silent R is contemplating doing like have a half a month on me.
God, that would be nice.
Oh, it would be wonderful. It would get us to Netroots Nation and take a lot of that pressure off, because there's a lot of pressure that comes with that.
I've always thought that mugs and T-shirts, if you get somebody to underwrite the cost of,
well, we've got some mugs, and they've been going out to folks here and there.
I have never heard of a horn mug.
No. They exist. I send them out quietly. You know, for people who are, you know, long time, you know, because I don't have a whole bunch of them. I just send them out quietly.
I'll trade you. I don't know if I want to part with my BBC Radio York mug.
Well, oh, you don't have to part with anything.
No, I'll.
If we print up a bunch more of them, because it costs about $10 to send every one of them out.
I know.
So
because mugs
that's
are heavier than they seem, you know.
Oh, we got. I mean, we got little boxes and everything, but but at any rate, I'm going to wrap things up and you know, go read the 25th Amendment, read Section 4, pay attention to that clause, or such other body as Congress may by law provide.
I will, Bob, but as soon as I hang up, I'll look it up. Okay, I promise you. But I'll leave you with two words: Ollie's trolley.
Working on it. But the weather here is so sketchy. I'm certainly not going to go walking down into D.C. Not with, and we're basically living in the House office buildings from like 9 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon. So it doesn't present a lot of opportunities. But if we get loose, and, you know, we'll be back. I'll have an Ollie burger yet.
Well, I hope you will.
All right.
Bring me one. Drop it off. You don't come this way. Well, never mind. Sorry about you.
All right.
Take care. Have a good rest of your evening. And tomorrow is what? Prayer meeting Wednesday?
Prayer meeting Wednesday. Boy, this ought to be a lulu.
That ought to be wild.
All right. Take care, Scott.
You too, Bob. See ya.
Bye. That's our buddy Scott, calling from San Diego way. And so, yeah, we will knock off here with about 13 minutes into the third hour of the program. My pool time is severely curtailed, but nonetheless, I don't know, maybe get a bite to eat now. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who kicked in this evening to take the fundraising goal down. Thanks very much indeed. 6:30. It'll be 8:30 tomorrow. But if we knock it all out, we're done with fundraising for the month of June as of Friday. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff over in the chat room. Thanks very kindly to Sparky. And thanks very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years it's been that Coal River Mountain Watch has led the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, in southern West Virginia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.